is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being here every day. A lot of different topics we're covering on Inside Douglas County. But we do have a session of the legislature underway, checking in on that periodically. State Senator Floyd Przanski, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Kyle, thank you very much for having me.
And real quick at the front end, we've talked about this with other lawmakers in the last couple of weeks, but remind folks about the different aspects of how this session is operating virtually, physically, et cetera.
Yeah, this is very unique for all of us to have to be out of the building and actually conducting a session, but clearly we have our work that we have to do. So we've gone to virtual, basically, meetings that individual committees are meeting virtually. Everyone in the public has access to it through the internet services. We also have a station at the Capitol for those who want or need to be at the Capitol that they can outside actually participate, just like any other individuals. So one thing it's maybe good is that we have more opportunity for the general public to participate without being in the Capitol, but it's very strange not being in the Capitol and having the Capitol open for all of us to be part of it. But we're doing what we need to do, and at this point we've set a schedule that we go to the floor once a week during the month of February. That's for procedural moves and the process that we need to, what we call it, advance the calendars. And so when a bill is filed, it has to be first read. Then from first reading, it goes to committees. So these are protocols that we need to do. And we need a quorum, so 20 out of the 30 members need to be present. And so far, we've been able to maintain the quorums, move the advance the bills, and have the other measures and stuff that we need to be doing covered through the virtual process.
So a lot of different structure there, and it's got to be different with everything involved politically when you don't really read in all the emotion or all the thoughts or the body language so much in Zoom or TeamViewer or whatever format you're using.
That's true, and that's one of the things that I have had a conversation with our presiding officer, President Courtney, and I think he's going to be reaching out to each of the committee's chairs to ask them to try to get members to actually participate with their audio and video, well, with their video on and leaving their audio off as we normally do until we actually are speaking so we don't get feedback. But your point's well taken. I've heard that from a couple of different individuals that they really missed that opportunity to have that face-to-face. And even though we can't do it socially distancing in the Capitol, the way the Capitol's built and structured, what we can do is accommodate as many people by making certain that we are visible for individuals during our committee meetings. And I think it's very important for that to be the perspective when we're taking testimony from individuals as compared to getting a slideshow PowerPoint presentation. So that's the goal I'm going to be looking at.
Well, and one of the things there, too, sometimes, and I've talked to a lot of folks in the business community who are doing most of their meetings virtually and all of that, is that sometimes even issues like lighting, if you're in a home office or something, your lighting isn't quite right, you can look a little fuzzy in the background, you're hard to see. And so there's, I mean, it's a whole separate aspect aside from politics, but it's one of those things that we're just kind of slowly working our way forward.
It is, and it's. I think this is a new dynamic for all of us. How do you maintain and go forward with business as usual, quote unquote, in the middle of a pandemic? And so it's a learning curve for all of us, but I am pleased that our IS, our information systems services, are doing the best they can. They're working with Team, that's the format that we use, which is a Microsoft product, to increase the size of the number of people that can be viewed in a screening, so you can have more of that interaction. That's at least having it video likeness as compared to some of the lighting issues you described. I know I found that I had to set my office in a particular way where I have the appropriate lighting where you can actually see. I can be seen, and we see that happening for others as well.
So review, since we're into a brand new year, your committee assignments, your role, and maybe any changes in the committees that you're sitting on.
Well, I still chair, and very thankfully to be able to chair the Senate Judiciary Committee. That committee is now also has the duty of implementing ballot measure 110. This is the measure that says that, and going forward, that we will not have simple possession of certain controlled substances being treated as a crime, and instead will be a violation non-criminal, and that we're basically shifting away from the criminal justice system for compliance for individuals that are addicted to controlled substances and basically moving them into a health care model, and at the same time holding those individuals, potentially individuals, accountable for other criminal acts in the criminal arena, but not just exclusively where someone has a user amount of controlled substances on their person that they're now going to be charged with a felony, because it has a lot of ramifications for not only them, but for a lot of other individuals that they touch in their lives.
And obviously that one has been very controversial. You told me before we went on, you were even on our interview earlier today in the Nation of Columbia.
That's correct. This is one of those situations. You know, Oregon has a unique feature of it, of not being scared of being a pioneer in many areas. Way before Susie and I moved to Oregon back in 1973, we were the first state that decriminalized marijuana, use of marijuana, in a less than an ounce, so a small portion quantity. This year, we are the first state, based on the vote of the people last November, to move us into a decriminalization for small amounts, user amounts of controlled substances. And it's unique because, you know, there's nowhere else in the country that's done it. There's some other foreign countries that have, and so we're going to be watching and not watching, but learning from what they did in years past. And we have a very large group of individual stakeholders that are helping us work through this process so we can honor the will of the voters and ensure we have accountability in the system to hold people accountable, and at the same time getting them out of the ramifications of having a felony conviction for something that they're addicted to. You know, addictions, we've learned, or at least I've learned as a prosecutor, you can't deal with and have success through the criminal justice system, and I'm happy that we have an opportunity to really move us forward in having people address those issues that are going to be long-term life-saving and actually return them back to their families and their communities as good people that can be productive.
Other than judiciary, talk about some of the other roles you have.
So I'm usually on environment and natural resources. That committee has been split into two. I was assigned to the natural resource and wildfire recovery, which I'm very pleased because having two of the major fires from Labor Day in the district, including the Archie Creek fire outside of Glide and the Holiday Farm fire outside of Eugene Springfield, really gives me an opportunity to be there for our constituents and ensuring that we are doing everything we can to help them. I'm also serving on the sub-committee in Ways and Means, known as the Public Safety Sub. This is a committee assignment that I used to have back when I was in the House many years ago, and it allows me to really track the bills that come out of the Senate Judiciary Committee into the money side of the equation of Ways and Means and building the budgets and ensuring that those policies are understood by those who are part of that subcommittee, so when we move them forward, everyone understands what the goal is from the policy side, and hopefully we can get the funding that will allow us to carry that forward. The last other committee that I am assigned to is the Senate Conduct Committee. That's a committee that only meets on an as-need basis, so that one has not caused much time requirement on my part for this session. So I'm really pleased with those other three assignments, and really feel that I'm in a position to actually help and under this need for the constituents around the wildfire recovery.
Talk about legislation you've authored or maybe are especially going to be pushing in this session.
Well, I'm still advocating that we need to give the judges the discretion and the power that they had 27 years ago before Measure 11 was passed, setting a mandatory minimum sentencing for certain type of crimes. And what I'm proposing, again, and fortunately there are other groups that are also looking at the similar perspective, but take the sentence that was approved by the voters in 1994, instead of saying one size fits all and everyone's going to get that no matter what they did or what their criminal history is, we'll make that a presumptive sentence just like we do in other felonies. And that would allow for the state to come in and advocate for something longer in sentence based on aggravating circumstances and situations, which right now they're not able to do. And then it also would allow for the defendant or their counsel to show mitigating circumstances. And then the court, the judge, would be the person, as we've always had in our criminal justice system, be the independent decider of what is the most appropriate sentence to give to this person for this crime and under these instances and these facts. I really think we as a state have lost that direction, and we really have overpowered the state in this particular situation based on just the charging. It puts them in a much higher position for some type of negotiations going forward.
Going to take a break at Inside Douglas County. State Senator Floyd Przanski with us. When we come back, we'll continue legislative topics, and the interview will be a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com. It's 1247. It's Inside Douglas County, and it's on News Radio 1240 KQEN. Douglas County, 1249, Lars Larson at 1. Monday's program, another conversation with County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer as we take a deep dive into issues around COVID-19. We'll be talking about a third potential vaccine and some other topics on Monday. State Senator Floyd Przanski with the legislative session, mostly virtual this year, joining us live this afternoon. And what about the COVID-19 impact on state governments? We've been monitoring this ever since March. It seems like at a time when more help is needed to citizens, it's also been a time that the state coffers have took a big wallop.
They have, and they will continue. I mean, this is one of those situations where we really, really, as all states, need to have the federal partnership to assist all of the states, including Oregon, in getting through this pandemic. So I'm very pleased that there's been some announcements that have come out of the new administration as to working with the states to ensure that we see additional resources to help us address a lot of these issues. So, but you're right, when you look at the impact on our general fund, we've already have a shortfall going into this budget building cycle. So it's very imperative that we are looking at where we can cross those T's, dot those I's to save money here or there, making certain that the limited resources we have are going to programs that are effective and actually carrying out the will of the policy and the legislation, and not seeing it somehow misused.
What about the state help for businesses? I mean, obviously, this past several months, you've got different risk levels currently that shuts or alters some businesses. And some of those, particularly restaurants, have been hard hit, and some shifts have been allowed. What kind of help for business can the state be offering?
Well, I think the state is offering some of the some of the relief that is needed. Clearly, we need to have, some additional packaging resource-wise to help facilitate the owners of these businesses, specifically restaurants, to be able to weather this circumstance. You know, having the model that we now have, having based on what the science is showing as to extreme risk or high risk, et cetera, the categorization dictates what happens. Of course, you know firsthand, and with Douglas County going back into a more strict sector level, the impact that it has on restaurants, their employees, etc. So I am hoping that we'll see additional financial assistance on a temporary basis as we move through this. I'm also hoping that we can see opportunities where we have seen in certain communities that have opened up their regulations to allow for more outdoor seating and ensuring that individuals can, in fact, just call it safe socially distancing and still being able to go to these businesses. It's imperative that we do this. I will also say, Colin, I'm very head-scratching when I see a lot of the big box stores, how they are able to stay open and do what they're doing. But when we start looking at some of the smaller operations, that they seem to be getting penalized, where it doesn't quite add up for me.
Yeah, and sometimes that seems to be a square footage discussion. One of the things along the way, really coming out of the freeze time a ways back, were some changes. For instance, allowing things like cocktails to go. I am actually not normally a cocktail person, but I've tried that a couple of times in the last week or two. And I wonder if some of these things might be something that we carry on post-pandemic.
I personally hope that we do. I mean, our state has been one of the more heavily regulated states when it comes to liquor and alcohol. And I do believe that we will learn from this that, hey, you can, in fact, offer these services for the convenience of a customer and have all the safeguards that are necessary that are being required now. And there's absolutely no reason, from my perspective, that we wouldn't be able to continue that in the future once we show that this does work. It does have the safeguards in place, and it is a move that allows for businesses to flourish and to actually maintain their bottom line. That is keeping their people employed and making some profit so they can keep the doors open.
For this district in particular, you cover parts of Douglas County, parts of Lane County. What special issues for this region are you seeing?
Well, I'm really focusing on the one committee, the Natural Resource and Wildfire Recovery, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show. Having two of the fires, to me, it's very important that we do everything we can to help accommodate those who have had losses and those who have been somehow inconvenienced or taken out for situations that they had no control over. I'll give you an example. There's types of permits called non-conforming use permits. Those permits are required for the holder of those permits to do whatever their use is at once every year, or they lose it. And so we've had a situation, and I'll use two examples here in Lane County. The Oregon Country Fair has that type of permitting. The First Baptist Church has that type of permitting for their church camp. And so what we were able to do at the county level was to get the county to basically waive the requirement that they actually use the service, because they can't. You know, the governor has put out an executive order that says you shall not do these things. And it doesn't seem right that a business or a holder of those permits should lose that permit because they are prohibited by a state action from doing it. So we're taking that same measure to the state. Senate Bill 405 is the one I've introduced. And there's another one that's been introduced, for Senate Bill 465. And we're in the process of putting those together. And what it will do, it will, in fact, take care of not only these non-conforming use permits, but also in areas where they've been devastated by the fires as to their ability to rebuild and having a significant amount of time, up to 5 years, to be able to start making those recoveries. And so those are things that I think are really, really important for us to allow those smaller communities on the rivers to be able to reestablish themselves and flourish in the future and not see people and their lifestyle be altered into the future.
And I know in this area, looking to the east here in the Archie Creek area, you've got homes that were constructed decades ago. Were they to be a vacant property now with nothing ever having been built on it, maybe land use regulations would have changed so you couldn't put a house there. And I know some folks have some concerns there about being able to put their house back where it was before because of rule changes since it was built.
There are, and those are some of the issues that we as a state have to look through on a policy level as to, I mean, there are reasons why changes were made to those policies that makes it more restrictive, such as ensuring that the waterways stay clean, that we're not having some type of contamination from septic that's not working adequately and properly. And so some of that stuff is just going to have to be looked at. And what we're, one of the things that we are looking at is how do we provide for some type of universal collector type of system. Orenco, which you're probably familiar with out of Sutherland, has those type of products where you can actually have modular sewer septic systems and to be pumped or in a more of a communal setting. So I think that there's going to be more discussions about that, and we're going to see how we can accommodate the best we can to allow for people to rebuild where they were at. But at the same time, there may need to be modifications for them to actually accomplish that.
Now, is this session going to run longer just because of the format and the technology?
It will not run for longer than the 160 days unless we, the legislature, enact the provisions in that legislation that would allow us to meet for additional days. I don't expect us to go beyond the 160 days that we have scheduled. What I do expect is that we may have special sessions afterwards.
State Senator Floyd Prusansky, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Kyle. Have a good day.
1258 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.